Yeah, really.
We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. This is our regular scheduled school board discussion group. It's November 8th, 2011. I don't have anything, I don't believe. Dr. Adams, you don't have anything up front, do you?
No.
To discuss before we get on to items placed by board members. Ms. Johnson, you're batting lead off today. Do you have an item?
Yes, I do have an item. First of all, I would like to, I'm certain that Dr. Adams is going to say it tonight, but I just would like to say how impressed I was with everything that I saw. I drove into town on Monday. Of course, I had heard what had happened. I got my message and all that. But I was amazed, you know, at 7 o'clock at night and how many teachers were still there. Of course, Jarvis was still there at Osceola School, and it was amazing, and I went back the next 2 days also. The third day, I talked to the kids, and I asked, you know, I said, I'd really like to go in the cafeteria, if that's okay. So Ms. Roberts said, of course, and I went in, and the kids were really, I said, you've had an exciting few days, haven't you? And this one little girl looked at me, and she said, yes, she said, there are three classes in my room. And I said, no. I said, do you have to share desks? She said, no. I said, well, that's pretty good. I said, you know, a long time ago when I was in school, so we used to have to share desks. There was two to a desk. And she kind of laughed, and I said, what's the toughest thing about having three classes in there? She looked at me like I had two heads. And she said, nothing. You know, like, well, there's no problem, so nothing. And the teachers. The teachers I talked to, I was just so impressed with. Nobody was fussing. Everybody was very positive. Everybody was focused on solving the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that was very, very important. However, I placed this...
And I want to say that everybody's moving back into their classrooms today.
Oh, so okay. Very good.
They are getting back to normal.
So they're ahead of schedule.
They are ahead of schedule.
They are ahead of schedule. One last thing. I did have one teacher on the playground who was very honest, and she said... she volunteered, and I know the teacher. I can't think of her name, and probably wouldn't want me to say it anyway. But she said, you know, I'm always one of those people that they have to call who doesn't turn in their report cards, or who doesn't, you know, file their report cards and do all that. She said, and I did all of that on Friday. I don't know why I did all of that on Friday. She said, but I did all of that on Friday. So evidently, they were very much ahead of the curve. You know,
cut off.
Cut off. Okay. Anyway, I will share with Chairman McCain. All that being said, I put on the agenda not because of the situation in Osceola, but because of the situation in Osceola. As I mentioned to Dr. Adams, I'm not sure what exactly has transpired. I do know that when we had our information session, where we went over several issues, our quarterly information session. I know the board had given some direction, and of course that is not any kind of executive privilege. That is information that's out there. The board had given direction on egress. We had given direction on student access, and we had a wonderful discussion. I don't see those things happening. Also on retention, having looked at some other drafts of some things that have come forward, I just wondered where we were. Also, I feel as though I'm looking at our August 25th memo, and some of the things in this memo aren't really reflected in the last contract that I saw that came forward. So I just think in the public eye, not in an information session, but in the public eye, we need to be discussing these things: retention, parking, ingress, egress, and I understand student access is not an issue any longer. So, but I'd like to hear that. I'm sorry?
No.
Was there? Okay. So I would like to hear what's happening. And I want to hear, not just read, but I want or hear from parents at Osceola. I will tell you, that's the biggest thing I've heard, including being in the post office and having a parent I didn't even know who, once the postman van said, well, Mrs. Johnson, why aren't you out cleaning up water? she came over and she said, you know, my child's in kindergarten. Are we actually going to get this school built before she's on to middle school? So I'd like to know the same question.
Okay. The answer is yes. Nothing that's happening is going to, you know, keep us from building, you know, of making Osceola Magnet whole in terms of having to deal with flooding. Just to kind of bring you up to date, I think the October was the last discussion we had on Point West regarding the ingress egress, and so I want to bring you up to date on the things that we've reached agreement on, and I'm going to put it in a context of what's in the original agreement, what's not in the original agreement, and what we've been able to accomplish to this point. Student access. And remember, the original agreement goes back to 2000, and so there's really not a lot of specifics in that, okay? So whatever is outside of that basically has to be negotiated because there's nothing in the original agreement on many of these issues. And the first of that, which is what we talked about initially, was student access. And a Point West feeling like their families would have access to coming to the magnet school. And so we worked really hard. We went back and forth. We did come up with a plan that met, that we could all agree to. So student access, which is outside the agreement, was accomplished. Additionally, we offered to pave and widen because it needed to be widened, 76 Drive, which is adjacent to the site of the new site. So the school district agreed to pave and widen 76 Drive. Out of our October meeting, we agreed and put in the agreement that we would provide and pave an ingress egress on the northeast corner of the property, which was not part of the project. That was not a requirement. It was a convenience, but as a board, you know, we agreed that we were going to go ahead and put that in, which was put into the development agreement that was sent to Point West. Additionally, there were two encroachments on the Point West on our property, and we agreed with Point West to allow them to carve out those two encroachments. So that was another thing that we reached agreement on that wasn't necessarily part of the in the original document. And then the other thing is the retention. And what we found in the original agreement was that there was 150,000 square feet that was part of the original 2000 agreement, and that we found that we needed about 300,000 square feet. So we did have an appraised value of the additional 150,000 square feet, and that came to $267,000. We originally offered $241,000, which was minus 10%, because in some of the original documents we had, it showed that they would that there would be a 10%. They would provide 60% of it. That's what it was. And so in further negotiations, we offered to give that 10% back, which then brought the full value of the appraised value we offered to the developer, which is $267,000. We have not agreed on that. We've made that offer, but we haven't. They haven't agreed to that. So I would say those are the things that are outside the agreement that we have negotiated and agreed to put on Point West. But they were not part of the original agreement. So to sum it up, what we really haven't agreed to is they are asking that we pave Point West Drive and I can't think of the number, Manor Street. It's the Point West Drive, the circle, and up Manor. And these are not contiguous to the school property, and they are private roads, and they are asking that we pave those. We have not agreed to put our public dollars toward that. We have also not agreed to pay the $300,000 that they've asked for, but are using our appraised value that was done of $267,000.
parking is no longer an issue. We worked through that with Stan Bowling. I personally called him to be sure that that was going to be okay. So what was an issue at one time, and we offered to have them have parking at the school site on the off hours, we really were able to recoup those parking spots that were eliminated as a result of widening the road, and there are no restrictions on them as noted by the county. So there has been, there are several points that the school district has been willing to negotiate and give above and beyond what was originally called for. So that kind of brings you up to date on where we are in terms of Point West. We sent an agreement, was October, and we asked, is this agreement acceptable or not acceptable? And that's what we're, where we are.
Anyone have any comments? Ms. Menon?
So where do you stand with that? Have you received a response yet relative to that?
The response that we got was that there were still some outstanding issues, and which, again, Mr. Morrison asked, do you agree or not agree? Do you accept or reject the agreement? And we didn't get an accept or rejection, but we feel like it's a rejection without actually saying it.
Can I follow up?
Of course.
So then what's the follow-up to that? It seems like we're in limbo. So how is that going to be addressed? If there was no response, no concrete response to the agreement, then what is the next step?
Then they've rejected the agreement that we've put in, and the board has to give direction on staff has put the two agreements forward. Neither one have been accepted at this point.
Just to clarify, because there were several agreements, so that I want to make sure I'm looking at the right one. The most recent one was the one that had, Mrs. DeAgresta is right here, the 241, or no?
No. This
okay.
is a prior version.
Sorry. That's what I wanted to double check.
Yeah, I think it was October.
There was an October version, beginning of October, and it showed an increase
okay.
in that. It showed the additional information on the roads that Dr. Adams just mentioned. We still need to get that new legal description that carves out the encroachment.
Okay.
And then the additional ingress.
Okay.
You don't have the most up to date one. I'm happy to give you a copy of this.
Thanks. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was looking at the right one, which I wasn't.
And I think in the last meeting that we discussed it, there was certainly an indication that they felt that the ingress-egress was going to resolve the issue.
And when was that last meeting you had with Point West?
It was prior to that. It was when we sent the last... It was before the last meeting that we discussed the ingress-egress. We added that to the agreement.
Well,
I think so.
My timeline, I mean, you were kind enough to send us the information from the August 25th
right.
meeting. You did send that to us. And I don't really have anything else for any other meeting except for the conclusions. So,
For the discussions that we've had.
That we had at our information.
Right.
Our last discussion was our information
that's right.
session, and that's where I think we thought we were going to move forward.
I did too.
This, just to clarify, I'm sorry. This agreement, which is why I'm glad I wasn't looking at it, reflects what we discussed
yes, it
at
does.
The information session. So then, once that went out, we haven't discussed it since then.
That's correct.
Okay.
And that was October.
That was October.
Yes, can you tell me where you are for student access? I just would like to hear it.
Okay. Do you have that one with you? If not, I would have to
page
go get
two.
It. I didn't have... Okay. It's kind of lengthy. I'll give you the points. Okay.
Thank you. That's all I need.
For the 2000... And this was part of the memo that I did send you, but it's been a while. For the 2012-13 school year, up to 25% of the total kindergarten stations shall be available for Point West students. Three student stations in kindergarten will be held available until July 15th, 2012. and then be made available to other eligible students. And the reason for that is we have a lottery in kindergarten. So we were holding 25% of those for Point West. We would continue to hold three more slots until July 1st, when everything's usually full by that time, and then after that we would go to the waiting list. For the 2013-14 school year, up to 25% of the total kindergarten stations and up to 25% of the student stations of one classroom in each grade 4 and 5. And the reason for that is we would have new grades added. We would have a new grade 4 and a new grade 5 added at that time, so we would have seats available. Three student stations in kindergarten and grade 4 and 5 will be held available until July 15, 2013, then made available to other students. Additionally, in the event a VPK program is implemented in Point West Community age-appropriate students are eligible to apply. For the 2014-15 school year and thereafter, up to 25% of the total kindergarten stations shall be made available, same, three open until July. For the 2012-13 school year and thereafter, and up to 25% of any available student stations as defined below in grades 1 through 5 shall be made available for such students. For purposes of this subparagraph, available student stations shall mean any unfilled student stations in grades 1 through 5. So after you have it full, then you may have two or three openings for the following year, at which point they would get 25% of them rounded up. After the requirement of the enrollment of African American students in compliance with the DeSega order has been met, and only if there are less than 25% of the Point West students already enrolled per grade level. In the event 25% of available student stations results in less than a whole student station, we shall round up for the benefit of the Point West community students. In the event there are 25% or more Point West students already enrolled per grade level, the Point West community shall be placed on the waiting list for Osceola Magnet School in date order received. For the provisions described in this paragraph 5, the student must present a letter executed by the developer indicating the student's family is a homeowner in Point West community. Upon prior written notice to the school board, the developer may assign the obligation set forth in this subparagraph to Point West Master Property Owners Association, Incorporated. Notwithstanding the above, it's understood by the parties that all students must meet the school board's requirement for attendance at a magnet school. The parties agree to annually review the above student attendance provisions and consider revisions as deemed necessary.
The reason that I asked you to review that again is because it will come before us as an entire document.
That's correct.
At some point. And I just feel that it's important to, once again, voice my concern that we are allowing a donation to direct policy rather than having policy direct the donations. And it concerns me that we are changing magnet admission policy because of a donation. I believe that Osceola needs a new facility, and I believe that Point West students should be allowed to go to their neighborhood school. But what we're doing is trying to marry a magnet school into a neighborhood that would have students walking to a neighborhood school. And I just feel that we are taking a wrong turn when we allow a donation to direct policy.
Anyone else? Ms. Johnson?
In the visits to Osceola, and as I said, I did speak with several teachers, including teachers on the playground, it is unfortunate that, you know, people use, they aren't always careful about referring to the school board or the school district. They're one and the same in the eyes of the public. And unfortunately, I had, in one of my discussions with one of the groups of teachers, they did not tell me who, but someone from the school board, so I'm assuming they're referring to us as not five people, but as an entity, that they have been told that the school board was tired of the situation. We were tired of the student access being a sticking point, and that we all know how rumors start. And they were told that the school was not going to Point West under any circumstances. We were already negotiating. I did speak to Dr. Adams, told her the places I was told that the school was going to go. I mean, nobody sits there and makes these things up. Somewhere it got started. I assured the teacher that student access was not a consideration. That had been settled quite some time. The other teacher who was standing there said, well, you know, I think what's happening is that our small group of parents who started the change that put us behind schedule is still at work somewhere. And I said, they are not at work with me. I don't believe they're at work with any other school board member. This is November. This is 6 months after Vero Beach Elementary started. This is 6 months that we were supposed to have started shovel in the ground for Osceola. I don't like this. I don't like this at all. I've said it before. This is not my job. I don't want to get involved in negotiations. But I think to have negotiations, you have to have dialogue. And if we have dialogue, I would hope, and Mr. Meckling, this is no criticism of you, but as you know, I don't always answer when you call. I make certain that I have my information together, and 9 times out of 10, my answer when Mr. Meckling calls is, I don't have any new information for you. Simple as that. I don't want to be involved in these negotiations. That's why we have a school board attorney, and that is aptly named. Our attorney is our board attorney, not the district's attorney, allowed to do that work on our behalf at the direction of the board. I would like very much for there to be some dialogue on this paving and on this retention. And I think we need some additional back and forth. I don't want that to happen here today. I really don't. But I think if that's the pleasure of the board, we gave direction on ingress egress, we gave direction on student access, those things have been accomplished. If it is the pleasure of the board, I think we need to say, if those are the two sticking points with Point West, and indeed this board wants to continue with Point West as the location or the relocation for Osceola, I would like for the board to give some sort of, that's what this discussion is about. It doesn't have to be a formal vote. Do you want to continue with this or not? Or indeed, are those rumors that are out there, are they indeed true? So, I don't know.
Ms. Menes?
Thank you. Well, first of all, I really would like to thank Karen for sharing her concern about this idea of a donation driving policy. I think as board members, we need to be mindful of what our role is in terms of setting policy. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to bring up, but it needs to be said. So I really thank you for saying that, because as a board member, I feel that we're doing all that we can to make this happen because we see the need. I mean, we don't need any more storms to remind us of how we are dumping taxpayer dollars into a facility that it's the location is just not an acceptable location. And I was really appalled when I talked to people who said, you know, this has been going on for years, 40 years, 50 years back, this was an issue. And I keep asking myself, how is it possible that for so many years this was unaddressed until we get to this point right now? So I do think we as board members need to be mindful of being able to draw those lines between the importance of donations and doing what is right for students. I would like to ask Dr. Adams, in consideration of the situation that we are in, trying to move forward with this, because there is an urgency. I mean, I really do want to see an agenda item that allows us to move forward to make sure that Osceola Magnet is where it needs to be. What is your recommendation as superintendent as to how we move forward as a board?
Well, I'd like to say a couple of things. First, I'd like to say that we're willing to continue to negotiate if the board wants to. We have set what we think is a fair offer, and we've negotiated, and we've negotiated often. So we think we've put a fair offer on the table. If the board feels like we need to continue to negotiate, that's certainly the direction I would take. The other thing I'd like to say to the board is, you know, I was pretty thrown into this July 1st, you know, when it happened. It all kind of happened at one time. And we moved quickly. And, you know, since that time, we really tried to stop and reflect a little bit on, you know, where are we, what should we be doing. And there are other options. You know, Mrs. Johnson came to me and told me what the rumor was. Well, the rumor was untrue, but there are options. And I think at this point, you know, what the board asked me to do is to think boldly and think outside the box. And if you want me to do that, I will. And so what I'm asking you is to keep Point West on the table as an option, but to allow us to have a workshop to explore what we think all the options could be for Osceola Magnet, because I agree 100% with you. Something has to be done with Osceola Magnet, and we can't wait beyond what would happen if we opened at Point West in 2013. So I would like to propose that we have a workshop as soon as possible so we can talk about what are the options that the school board has for Osceola Magnet School. And I would ask if you would consider it to do it next week on Tuesday, because that was an open week for us, and I know we have got to move swiftly and decide what's going to happen with Osceola Magnet. But I do think that as a board, we have to explore what all of our options are. So that's what my request would be.
Thank you. I don't want to belabor this, because I think that is a good recommendation. I see both sides of this being, you know, we're in the midst of a negotiation, and I have expressed this to both parties. You know, I think in fairness to Dr. Adams, that contract reflects what we agreed to, what the board direction was at the last information session. And where I'm at now is, you know, at some point you can't talk about an issue anymore. We negotiate, and I'm not saying not to continue negotiations, but I think that the board needs to say at a certain time we're either done or we're going to continue, but we can't continue. It's 6 months. We've really been going on, and we're not in a position where we've made substantial progress, and I'm not blaming that on anyone. I just think that it's imperative that, you know, this be placed as an item on our agenda for the board to either accept or reject one way or the other, so that there's some finality to it. You know, again, I understand, and I get, you know, frustrated too when I have a client and, you know, I advise them at some point you have to make your best and last offer. If you're trying to settle something, you make it, it's accepted or rejected, and you know where you're at. And I think that's where we need to get to very, very quickly. The other thing, and this is related to Osceola and the relocation, but it's more of an overall question about our district. Mm-hmm. And you could probably going to bring this up at our workshop on Tuesday, but it's something that I wanted to throw out there. The condition at Osceola was really unacceptable last week. And it was disruptive. I know initially there were questions about what we were going to do with the students in order to keep them. You know, our goal is to educate kids. And that was disrupted by a situation that we've been aware of and that has happened in the past. Mm-hmm. Is there a short-term or a quicker solution to relocating Osceola? And then Mr. McCain had brought up previously, maybe that Osceola property, another school should go there. Maybe it's not a magnet, maybe it's something else. I think you said that on one of our workshops. I don't mean to misquote your misstate. What I'm saying is, what's the enrollment like at our current elementary schools? And would it be worth exploring whether we can reallocate students from one of those schools to other schools and then move Osceola to an existing elementary school that needs to be you know, just as a possibility. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not saying that, I'm not certainly not foreclosing Point West. I just want to know what the options are and the direction of our district with the current enrollment and the forecast enrollment that we have for elementary school students. Sorry, I know that was long.
We want to explore options. You know, you give direction when it's all over, you know, in terms of what it is. But I think that I think it's important to look at what all of the options are. And that's what we would like to talk about.
Ms. Johnson?
I would like to ask, since I did state last Thursday that I wasn't going to be here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, and it's on the board calendar that I'm not here.
Next week?
Yes.
Okay.
If we could do the meeting early, I will just wait to leave until the afternoon. If we could do the meeting at 9 o'clock, I know sometimes we have 1 o'clock. If we could please do it at 9 o'clock, I would appreciate it very much because I do not want to miss another meeting.
Sure.
On critical issues.
Sure.
Thank you.
It's up to the board.
Yeah, I also was going to request of the board because of the way the calendar situation was. There was nothing scheduled, so I have a meeting scheduled at 9:30 that I would hate to have to miss. So I was going to ask for the 1 o'clock option. So, you know, maybe we could explore another day, maybe that Thursday, so that everybody.
When are you coming back?
I'll be back until Friday.
Okay.
I'm going to miss the Thursday. I'm going to call in, and I will be part of the discussion on Thursday. But. I
mean, how about Friday? I don't know, but that's, is that an option?
I have a 8.5-hour drive on Friday. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Could you be ready by Monday?
No.
Ms. Munns?
How about 11 o'clock? Second in the morning. We have nothing until.
Yeah, like it's a 2-hour meeting. That's all right. Like I said.
Mrs. Menendez isn't going to be here either.
22nd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, there was a calendar mix-up, and I had already made my flight reservation, and I can't change.
Let's see. Let's look at the
11 o'clock might work on Tuesday.
It's all right.
11?
I'll make it
okay.
Work.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks. And thank you also. I did thank both Mr. Pegler and Ms. Jimenez for attempting to put off an important issue until this board meeting, and I appreciate that they did that. I certainly think that with important issues, I'll bring it up now. Ms. DeAgresta, is it in stone that we have to have our organizational meeting the third Tuesday after the first Monday?
Yes, ma'am. It's statutory.
I just wanted that out there.
Yes. Yeah. It is a requirement under
Florida law. It's
always been
that way.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
One more question. For our workshop on, what are we doing it now? Tuesday
15th at 11 a.m.
No, that's going to be a Friday, Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
Can we get from you, from staff, the difference between Point West has a figure for the retention.
Right.
And we have a figure for the retention.
Right.
Can staff tell us or show us how they've come up with that figure?
Absolutely.
I know that, you know, you said it was an appraisal, but that would help.
Okay.
And the second thing that I wanted to ask, the paving.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard various figures for the paving of Point West Drive.
Right.
And can they present that also? Because there's a big discrepancy between what I've heard. And I'd like to look at that so that we get a clear picture.
Okay, absolutely.
Could we also make certain that those are the issues that, and those amounts are the questions and the concerns of Point West before assuming? I'd like for you to have that discussion, not this board, with representatives from Point West, that indeed this $267,000 is not acceptable. You said you haven't heard anything.
There was an email that said the sticky points were still the retention and the paving, basically.
So there hasn't been any dialogue since you got the email. Well, I think before we assume that those issues are still there, that staff needs to at least make certain those are the sticking points.
Well, again, like we made our offer. We were asked, but those are the only two sticking points that I'm aware of. We've conceded everything else and negotiated.
So you don't want to get the phone call to find out if indeed, I mean, it, if they didn't say we can't agree on the retention or the paving, if they didn't say that, then and maybe there's one. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I tell you what. Let me. I'll go ahead.
That's
I
fine.
Think everybody's got
We're glad to do that.
To talk. Anybody have anything else, Ms. Disney?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that I understand that the board gave you direction, Dr. Adams, mm-hmm. and I have confidence in the negotiations okay. that you've done so far. That is not a question. I just felt that since this is something that I sort of picked up a flag on, and I don't do that often, if all things stay the same, it's likely that I will not support the contract, and I felt that I should let you know now rather than wait until it hit the day. So that's the reason I brought it up.
I think everybody's had a couple of points I just wanted to make. I don't know how far back to go. I mean, it's no secret when this goal went back 2 years ago when we were looking to repurpose Thompson. You know, I said Mr. Pegler wasn't around then, but you know, I thought then that we should move this out to Thompson. So, I mean, going to Point West was not my first and initial choice. However, we've gone so far down that road, and we do have a valuable asset that's sitting there. I think we'd be at this point. I think we'd be very negligent in not taking advantage of the opportunity we have there, or at least we wouldn't be very cost conscious. I have a feeling, and this doesn't come from conversations per se, as it is a culmination of many conversations, that, and I know we have, that the district staff has negotiated, sat down. However, lately, I don't know that that's been happening. And many times, instead of just firing off a contract, you know, these two issues, somebody needs to sit down with somebody. And Ms. Johnson was right earlier that our job is not to sit down and negotiate. I have no intention of negotiating. If I'm drawn into it and I have to, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. My fervent wish right now is to move forward with Osceola, get it done, break ground tomorrow. I have a feeling, and again, this is not a direct quote and it's not anything set in stone, but I think the parking, the paving issue will go away. I think the ingress and egress, we could save money by not doing that. The issue of retention, I understand the district's, we've got an appraisal. It's, I mean, that is a good indicator of value. But I would, still there's room for negotiations. I would ask, normally what I would do, if I were doing this in my business, I would suggest to a client, ask the developer in this case, go out and have an independent appraisal done by a certified appraiser, you know, and then if that appraisal comes in higher, then we can negotiate. Do we take one or the other? Do we take an average? Things like that. Because it is hard to go to the public and say, we had an appraised value of 267 and we paid over appraised value. That's a tough thing to do. I understand that. However, again, negotiations is not emailing a contract. And I'm not saying you haven't negotiated. I'm saying right now, we can get this done. You guys can get this done and get it done now. Because these things are negotiable. I promise you that. I try, every time I get in such a, you know, everything that we do as school board members, I try to bring my experiences that I've gone through ever since college. I mean, working for a publicly traded company, working for a CPA firm, having my own CPA firms, and I've had several situations where you've been involved in negotiations very similar to this. You know, we've had clients who either investors, speculate, you know, spec houses, you know, GCs, and developers, all those, you know, I've been in those negotiations, and not every time, sometimes there are differences that just can't be overcome, but I'm telling you right now, Mr. Prager, don't listen to this. I can't tell you how many times you've gotten down to the last couple of issues, and the way they get done is you tell the attorneys, here's $5, go get yourself a sandwich somewhere. Go find somebody else to play with, and we get the owners together. You know, granted, you get a couple of goober CPAs to tell you how much things are going to cost, and you get those folks together. That's how things get done. That's how they get pushed over the finish line. I understand you've got some information on Tuesday. if I lived in a perfect world, it wouldn't even get to that, because you'd have an agreement done by Thursday of this week. I'm just asking you to please sit down with those folks, not by email, not by sending another contract, not by doing anything like that. If you feel better having do it with the board present, if you want me there, I'll be there. Again, it's not our job to negotiate, but I just have a feeling that these things can get done.
And board, a contract goes out after a meeting. You don't email. A contract actually is written after meetings. Those meetings occur, then a contract is sent out. The only thing that was added that we didn't meet was with the ingress egress. But, you know, I wouldn't want you to think that we're not having meetings, because we meet, discuss, then send out the agreement.
If we're just sending out an agreement that we know is going to be rejected, though, I mean, you know, we're just sending it out just for the purposes of, okay, purpose of it.
Not really.
Rejected.
We've got five things that we've agreed to that were not in the contract.
Absolutely. And we've done a great job. That's when, you know, the hard part's done. It seems like this is just, you know, this should be the easy part. Mr. Kreger?
I appreciate everything you said. The only thing I want to clarify, in fairness to Dr. Adams, is that she was acting based on the board's direction of the information session, where we said, you know, we will pay for the ingress and egress if Point West will pay for the paving. So that, I feel like we're putting her in a box, and maybe we need to take a step back and say, you know, see what you can come up with, and then make a recommendation to the board, because we did box you in to a certain extent, and you were acting, in my interpretation, you were acting in accordance with what we had asked.
Ms. Menace?
Okay.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because I do remember, you know, when the superintendent came on, we wanted to move forward, and we said, we want a timeline, we want this done. And it seems like now that the work is being done to make this happen, all of these issues are arising. If this had been taken care of earlier, you know, we would have been preempted that there were issues that needed to be resolved. We weren't aware of the encroachment. There were things that we really were not privy to at the time. So I really, as one board member, feel that it would be very appropriate to give Dr. Adams an opportunity to present that workshop, to tell us what, you know, the outcome is of any negotiations you may do between now and then, to be prepared to speak with the board, and let her tell us if there are any other options, so that we can place this on the agenda and move forward and be certain that in doing so we've done our due diligence, that we haven't just said, well, we started this, we have to finish it, and we're going to make it happen, which, you know, that may be what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, you may negotiate, go to the table, everything is fine, but I think we would be remiss if we didn't hear what the options are, because I think the more information we have, the more informed we could be. So I still think that, you know, it's only next Tuesday. We're not talking about a month from now. Next Tuesday, we should be able to have some direction, I would hope.
I do have, this is going to be the pleasure of the board. It's absolutely, I know it's highly unusual. Mr. Meckling is in the audience. We're hearing right now that this is rejected, that's rejected, it's rejected. Does the board want to hear from Mr. Meckling at this time? Like I said, we don't want to make it a habit, but if there's three people who think, because he's raising his hand over there, I think he might have some information that at least he thinks it might be of use to the board. It's at the pleasure of the board.
We have taken input before during roundtable discussions.
We have. And this is a roundtable.
I don't want to negotiate. If he has a statement to make, I'm not adverse to hearing the statement. I just don't want any discourse.
Put it this way. If anything's been said that's erroneous or it needs clarification, I'd be happy to hear it. Obviously, we don't want to start the precedence of having a back and forth with community members.
I would be fine with it as long, you know, I agree with Mrs. Johnson. I don't want to negotiate here now because I don't want it to have a negative effect on the negotiation we're going to enter into.
Ms. Jimenez?
Yeah, I agree. No discourse. My only concern in doing this, and I don't know how to say this, but I think, you know, we need to trust that our superintendent and her staff are negotiating in good faith. And if, you know, this kind of puts out there to the public that there's a question about that when we are having someone present that may present information that it's that we're not getting. I mean, I just worry that we are setting, we're putting our superintendent and her staff on the spot, and I just, you know, I really believe that our superintendent and staff are working in good faith, and I don't want to be second-guessing
in
any way, shape, or form.
I hope I have not implied that at all.
I have no problem with that. I would rather he had the opportunity to come up and speak to the board. I honestly don't have a problem with that.
She's going to say five phone conversations later on.
I hope so.
Okay. I just wanted to put that out there.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, my comment was I don't want to do anything to usurp the superintendent's authority.
I'm fine with it, really.
Or imply that we don't.
Sure.
Mr. Beckman, is there anything that you can add that will help us in our discussion?
And I appreciate you giving me this opportunity. I'm ready to wrap this. Chuck Meckling, Point West. I am ready and prepared to wrap this up. Last time we had a sit down face to face was September 9th. I had sent numerous emails to Dr. Adams to get a point of clarity on some of the issues that had come up in that meeting. And they, you know, became relevant when we got the paperwork. So I had a couple of questions. We are prepared to finish this. It will be to the board's satisfaction. And I relish the opportunity to have a one-on-one with Dr. Adams before the next workshop, because this is such a simplistic thing to get finished. It's just, I don't understand. And again, I feel if we could have had one more meeting, this wouldn't even have been on the agenda today, because this would have been all wrapped up. So I'm a part of the solution, want to get this finished.
Okay, thank you.
To the board's satisfaction and for the school system's satisfaction.
All right, thank you, Mr. Macklin. Appreciate it. Anybody have anything else on this issue?
Just one final thing. I would very much like to see this as an agenda item on our December 13th is the board meeting after the 22nd. So if it's not on there, I would ask the superintendent to save a place for it. So they
For whatever.
For a superintendent's recommendation.
Recommendation.
To get Osceola Magnet.
Right. Something.
And just so the public has correct information, if we stop, if we make a decision in December, how far behind are we at this point? We are not 6 months behind.
Actually, our timeline for financing was in the December time frame. So we have been in some discussion with Jerry Ford regarding financing. And, you know, our goal is to be sure that we can open when we build a new school in 2013. So we are not putting that in jeopardy.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yes. Our goal was to be sure that we could look at anything that we needed to look at, but not jeopardize, you know, moving forward on whatever it was.
Okay. All right. And Dr. Adams, you feel you have direction on the issues?
Yes.
Okay.
And you'll be able to meet before our workshop to finalize those things.
Everybody. Ms. Disney, you're next on the batting order.
Are we going to have committee reports later? I just told you they are. My things are related to items that I learned in meetings.
Okay. Ms. Jimenez?
Yes, I put this item of the policy updates on the agenda, and I think it was just because when we left our last meeting and we were talking about the policy updates, I didn't leave thinking that we gave Dr. Adams direction as to how to handle the policy updates. I think one board member gave direction, but none of us had a comment. So I left thinking, okay, so how are we handling the policy updates? And the reason why I bring this up is because we all understand that the policy updates are outside of the retainer, and it costs more to make these updates. So I really am curious as to how we're handling this is staff working on the updates and then legal looks at them, or is legal doing everything? I just needed clarity because we didn't give direction at our last meeting.
Right. At this point, Mr. Gresta has been working on pulling some information together and actually has some updates for you today. But so far, she has been the person that's been, you know, working on with input from staff. I mean, she always sends them to us first, and then we give her input and send it back. But that was a difficult. I just want the board to know that's. I'm never sure where to go when one person says we want you to do this, and if it means if nobody says anything, it's hard for me to know. Are you giving me direction to move ahead or no? So, you understand what I'm saying?
This came up during
the last time when we were talking about attorney fees and NEOLA, and there were a lot of conversation about a lot of different things.
Is this the kind of thing that would fall under NEOLA? And we would get
Yes.
But let me, this has to do with procedure, and that is the chairman's job to make sure that you don't, if you don't ask, somebody needs to make certain, the chairman, it doesn't matter who
I'm going to sound like one more week of this.
No, I did not. I'm just saying that is, you shouldn't have to not know when we leave any meeting as to what the direction of the board is. By law, we cannot sit here and count every vote. We can count to three, but by law, we cannot go and say, Mr. Pegler, are you in favor of a location other than Point West? You know, Ms. Jimenez, we know what Ms. Disney's position is because she stated it and because she also voted that way against the Point West.
And silence means
you're not sure. You voted against the Point West location. That way.
That's
and
not fair.
I was not trying to be unfair here. But that's not fair to the superintendent for you to have had that question at all. If there isn't consensus, then silence does not mean that there is that there's support.
Okay.
And we
That's
and
good.
These kinds
I appreciate
of meetings,
that direction.
we cannot perhaps Ms. Dee Greston wants to weigh in on this, but we are not by law allowed to do a polling of the board, and it's yours.
That's correct. There can be no polling. This is not an action meeting, so you can take no official action. If you don't believe that there is consensus, the best thing to do is to put it on your next action agenda and give clear action direction to the superintendent. But certainly have, you know, whatever discussion you wish to have. And if there is clear consensus, then I think the superintendent will know what to do. If there's not clear consensus, if there's silence, then it's best to put it on an agenda and take some action on it.
Okay. So, having said that, we do have some information to bring forward to you today. So we're moving ahead. You know, we're continuing to move ahead. We don't want to wait too long on these because, after all, they did go into effect in July. So we do have some policy information to bring forward for you today to review with you so we can have some initial discussion and then make changes, you know, as necessary. So whenever you're ready and you've discussed all the things you want to do, we can discuss those.
Yes, excuse me, I was the one that asked that we move forward with the
right.
These policies taken care of because, like, as you said, many of them became law when they were signed. Many of them became law in July. And we are operating under these laws without the policies
right.
in place. And if we were to have a student operate outside of this law, we wouldn't have the policy to back up our
yeah.
response.
And quite frankly, what my goal was to do was to have mm-hmm. staff and Mr. Resta work together on the day that she was here. They have been slammed, you know. They basically haven't had the time to meet with her, would you agree,
yeah.
to do that.
Very
I mean,
busy right now.
It's just a very, very busy time. So she has taken the initiative to move ahead to try and get some of these on the books, okay? But the original plan was to have them working together on the time that she was spent here. But
I understand.
Okay.
Ms. minutes.
And just for clarification, it wasn't about moving forward with the policies. It was about the direction that we didn't give
and
about
I,
how to do
I
it
appreciate
the
clarification
of the
on
conversation.
All of that.
So we definitely, they are law. We have to comply.
Exactly.
It has to get done. But it was that lack of clarity as to the how. The why was obvious that it needed to be done.
So you were asking about procedure.
Yes.
Procedures.
Mr. Pegler, do you have any items?
I wanted to talk about the RFP, and I don't know if Mr. Chuma was here. I really didn't want to talk about it. he had brought it up, but I read through the draft, and I just wanted to give to the other board members an example of something that was in line with what my thought process was for consideration. We don't need to have a discussion about it because I guess everyone can submit their own edits. But I just thought that it would be worthwhile to pass this out. So I'll just pass out copies and then do with it what you would like.
And what is this?
This is an sample RFP from another school district for legal services. And what it does is it breaks it down into, you have the school board general cert council, and then you also have categories, but they're specified more clearly than the draft. And it's, you know, just this is just for consideration in the draft that we had. And based upon our discussion last Tuesday, this is what I was trying to verbalize. And if, you know, the board corporate feels that this is something that they would like to go forward with, great. If not, but I wanted to make sure it got out there for consideration.
Mr. McCain, in terms of procedure, what is the next step with this item?
This one's for Mr. Chuma.
Merry Christmas.
You're for me to have a bake sale or something? you don't have any paper clips?
It was here. I did it here.
We need to have a bake sale.
This was just an example of a brief legal services agreement for real estate that broke it down again into a subcategory that I thought people would want to look at.
Did somebody not get me?
I made it like 7. Okay.
Did everybody get the second one? Because there's one up here.
Well, there's one extra one.
Okay. All right.
And that was it.
Hi, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I haven't had an opportunity to take a look at this.
Sorry, I guess.
But I assume this is. I'll be more than happy to do so. And as far as speaking to the draft here that you have in front of you, that was to get the ball rolling, get things started. Allow the board an opportunity to review it and provide input that we can incorporate into the final RFP which will be released. Also to establish dates as far as when you'd like to interview. I believe March 31st is the end of the existing contract, so we have ample time to work through this process. My recommendation, though, is with the holidays, sometimes it's best to issue these RFPs, have them released, and come back before the holidays. A lot of times there are just issues with people failing to respond because these things get misplaced or the focus is not there during the break. So if you have it issued and back, and then you'll have the opportunity to set the schedule as far as interviewing and taking it to the board. You can do that much earlier than the contract expiring, which would allow that person basically being placed on notice that their start date would be, you know, after March 31st, if in fact there is a change. I think that on the last meeting, the board meeting, if you had an opportunity to look at the RFP, that's in essence the direction that I did. That's just what was discussed here as well. You have the ability with this particular draft, and certainly we can modify it to be more specific regarding the additional services. But, you know, the primary focus is still to hire a board attorney. I believe that was the direction that I received, with the ability to have wards for specialized services above and beyond. I mean, the day-to-day activities still have to occur, so that has to still be the primary focus in my recommendation. That can obviously change if you feel differently than that. But that was what I gleaned from the meeting, is that still, you know, needs to occur. And then the board, from what I understood, was would like to have the option to hire specialized attorneys for, of course, their future services yet to be determined. They would arise as events occurred in the district. And that's where you see where item two, and that would allow great flexibility as a firm, say, if they were just involved in, say, real estate construction, they would check that box, they would respond to this, you would interview that firm. There's no reason why you even have to provide a short list. You can go through the proposals, rank each and every proposal, and some may be specific to just certain areas. Bring them in, go through the process. I'm sorry, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just trying to locate the page on
the... it's page 9 of 18.
Okay, I guess I'm missing half of it.
Well, there are not 18 pages. We truncated this a lot.
Okay.
To renumber the pages. This was just to get started. But
only half has only 4 of 8. I mean, only has a total of 8. So I don't have a copy of that document.
Okay.
For some reason, I don't know, but that's okay.
Okay.
I didn't know we were going to discuss it today, so I didn't bring mine either. So
okay.
I can't really have intelligent discussion.
Yeah, and it's not the intent, I don't think, to go through this.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
No,
Susan's still sitting there.
It just seems to me like this is an item where we probably need a workshop. I see the timeline is for distribution and posting by FIP. Well, this is a very old document.
There are
so
no dates in this one.
Okay. Yeah, so I just don't have any current ones.
Would
That's
you like
okay.
me to get copies for everybody?
What I'm proposing is that maybe we need a workshop, because I know when I looked at the older document, I guess I can't even speak in an informed manner because I looked at the wrong document. But I do think, because there are things that we would like to see on the RFP, that it would be worthwhile for us to look at the document and figure out what is it that we collectively as a board are looking for if we are going to be part of the process. So that would be my suggestions, because we really can't talk about, we don't have all the copies and whatnot right now to make any kind of informed.
Sure. If I may, I'll just read the scope of services as how I've tweaked it. And what you have is obviously antiquated. At that point in time, it was the board direction to hire one attorney at that time, based on, again, the input that I received. And I won't read all this, but I'll just read the beginning. And this is just to see if I understand the flavor of the board and then the intent of the board. The school board of Indian River County is seeking proposals for board attorneys as well as additional legal services from multiple firms on an as-needed basis. Multiple awards for legal services will be made if it's deemed to be in the best interest of the board. The award will be based on the firms who, in the opinion of the board, can provide high-quality legal services. It is the district's intent to obtain professional services which all firms have the capability and capacity to perform legal services as required. The school board attorney position will report directly to the school board of Indian River. The board attorney's additional responsibilities will be to work directly with the superintendent of schools as well as the administrative staff. And this is where I get into the specifics. Item 1 on the attached bid summary page is for the selection of a board attorney. And item 2 will be awarded to firms who offer expertise or specialized legal services in areas not associated with the normal activity of the board attorney. All firms have the ability to respond to both 1 or 2 if they choose. And then we get into some of the specifics. So what I was trying to incorporate was the flexibility for you to, because first of all, you don't know who's going to respond and what their expertise will be. Although the intent is that a board attorney be one of those the directions, and then the other would be the services based on the responses. I mean, you may not have anybody that responds in areas that you're looking for, or you may have several responses that you'll need to narrow down and select. And I believe we had discussed that, you know, this, we have great flexibility with this document, because the selection of legal services is actually bid exempt. It is part of 287, I think it's 057, if I recall, that allows us to select attorney services. So we're formalizing a process. We do bid a lot of things that are bid exempt, accounting services, things of that nature. Those services are also bid exempt, but it has been the recommendation in the past to still have it go through a formalized process, allow ample opportunity for everybody to participate. So that's where we are on this document. And I did forward it to Ms. Dang, and she has the ability to forward that on to you again, or we can certainly have copies made for you to start the process.
Excuse me. So what I heard you say is that when the firms that receive this read it, they're going to say, oh, this is going to be broken down into pick a number of subspecialties, and that the board's going to award this to in any manner they wish. For instance, XYZ could get just one subspecialty, and Mr. Gresta could get nine subspecialties. Is that?
That is correct. Okay. And I've listed the, from what I could come up with, and this is where I was looking for input again from the board, but the different categories of law that I was able to come up with, like constitutional law, civil rights law, these could all be separate awards for certain individuals with highly specialized legal services. Florida school law, contract law, local government, Administrative Procedure Act, government contracts, procurement process, public record laws, sunshine laws, labor employment, collective bargaining, commercial, real estate, compliance, and then IDEA/ESE, which is obviously a highly specialized service in itself. So what that would in essence do is take some of the pressure off a board attorney of having, you know, all these under one roof. You could have, you know, like I said, multiple awards for highly specialized areas, and not knowing what the responses would be, that would incorporate the flexibility to allow you to do that after you review the responses. And that list is not all encompassing. If you have other services that you feel are highly specialized and would like for me to break those out, you know, we could.
So I guess one of the questions is, would you like to have a workshop on that to have full discussion?
Mr. Chairman, you said something earlier about a timeline. When would you suggest the best time for this to go out?
I was thinking that we would put it out in relatively soon. What I've done on the time schedule, and I have blanks, but I have November as far as distributing and posting and advertising, with an opening sometime in December. Opening doesn't have anything to do with the board work dates, you know, as far as the board meeting. It could just be an opening date when the proposals come back to my office. We publicly open them. We'll read the unit cost, and that will be the response. And then to schedule, the packets would go back to you with an evaluation criteria, which will allow you to shortlist in the categories, and then we would set up the interviews in either January or February, with an opportunity for it to go to the board before March. So you have some time.
Ms. Johnson?
You are going to, however, go through the enjoyable task of making certain that the check marks are in the right places and that certain accreditations are correct and those kinds of things.
Yes,
that's your job.
Correct. That is part of the process, and it also comes out through the interview process as well.
Sure.
When we formulate the questions. But as far as making sure that, you know, they have the requirements. Matter of fact, we specify it here, and it's, you know, it could be considered somewhat arbitrary, maybe even capricious, in the fact that they need 7 years of experience. That may be excessive. That was a requirement that we asked last time. Could be 5 years, could be 3 years, whatever the board. So everything in the document is open to interpretation.
And you don't have to have any kind of years of experience. You can even leave it open to say with experience, but not putting a number figure on it.
Well, how about if we work rather than doing that now? Could we, Mr. Chairman, could we workshop this as soon as possible?
Yeah, I'm just worried about timelines. Yeah, that's the problem. So
do you want to tack it on to the end of the
If we meet
Tuesday?
For 2 hours we are through at 1 o'clock, I still have an 8.5 hour drive, and I have to go home, and I have to. And I know it's not all about me; it's about the corporate.
Yeah.
But I really would appreciate it if we could do that, because I really want to be here.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Beck.
So is there any time
tough crowd.
If we want to have a decision?
I have a suggestion, kind of going away from the workshop concept, and I respect that you want us all to get together and talk about it, but Mr. Pegler's been leading the charge on this, mm-hmm. and I would be comfortable if I were to submit my comments to him and let him work with Mr. Chima on this RFP, mm-hmm. and then we can all regroup as in a workshop setting once they come back in.
Is that amenable to you, Mr. Chima?
Absolutely, sure. No problem.
And then we have somebody to blame
now. Does that mean me?
There's not a problem with me taking
the comments would be sent to Mr. Chuma.
Okay, and then
you will sit with Mr. Chuma and review everything
and
formulate a document that you will not be receiving comments directly from any school board member.
Okay.
All to Mr. Chuma.
Thanks. Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so we're comfortable with that? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item is my item. Ms. Stang should have given you a copy of the, what is this thing? The board meeting for your perusal. Just to look at if anybody's got any comments, I want, also before you get in there, please look and see what you were appointed to this year and put an alternate if there's something else. I know, Jeff, this was your first year on the board, but there's something that you either want to get out of or you want to get in on. Let me know. Stang, are you going to go before then? Are you going to go through all the board appointments? Because I know, like, in room number 5A, isn't Mr. Derwin, didn't he resign? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
No, you're correct.
Okay.
Mr. Derwin wanted to resign, and he will continue until you find someone, so we need the board to come up with someone who can take his place.
All right. Well, you're going to correct that on this agenda, right? Because right now it reads Mr. Derwin would like to continue in his position.
That is right. That's a draft.
Right. And you're going to go through and make sure all these people still want to do it.
I have contacted everyone.
All right. And I know 6A staff appointment says Dr. LaCava. This is a typo. You'll clean all that up, I'm sure.
Yeah, and we've made our recommendations.
Yeah, Ms. Amena?
Yeah, I'm glad you put this on the agenda because I will not be able to be here for that meeting because I had already made reservations going by the published calendar and I wasn't aware of the statutory requirement and so on. So I will, I did speak to Mr. Green about trying to join online, but that day I'm going to be driving from Ithaca to my parents' house. So I will do my best, but I could be cut off because I'm going to be on a cell phone traveling through New York State, unfortunately. So I wanted to do my due diligence and make sure that I shared with you just my thoughts. I really would like to put my hat in for vice chairman. So as you all consider that, I won't be here to do that. So I would like to just let it be known that that is of interest to me. I am happy to continue with my current appointments. I serve on the School Health Advisory Committee and on the Indian River Shores Planning and Zoning Commission, so I'd be happy to continue on those. I'm an alternate for the MPO and the EDC, and I'm happy to continue as an alternate. I see that Mr. Pegler is appointed to both. I'm amenable to, cooperating with you if you need to get out of any of those. And let's see, what else? I think that's about it. If we look on page 7, we've been rotating the Treasure Coast Council of Local Governments. I'm happy to continue doing that. I attend the Treasure Coast Advocacy Coalition, and I also attend the Treasure Coast Work Group occasionally, but I see Ms. Disney is the contact for that. So those are the ones that I'm involved in, and I'm willing to help out in any way if anybody would like to make suggestions. So I just wanted to put it out there in case I'm disconnected.
Mr. Pegler?
Yes. Just out of curiosity, and the board might have done this in the past, but for non-voting positions, has there ever been a discussion about the board member appointing someone to go on behalf of the board other than a board member? For example, Bellsmere P&Z is a non-voting position. So I drive out, which I have been lax about, to drive to Bellsmere. No, you do. 505, and I can't vote on anything. And so I understand you want board representation there to see what's going on, but would it be possible, or is it not something that anybody's interested in, to appoint someone who's interested in planning and zoning issues in Bellsmere to go on behalf? And I'm just talking about non-voting positions. It's just a thought. Take it either or leave it. But
I can tell you what I do with Sebastian PNZ is I look at the I email up there and I say, is there anything with schools? No, here's the agenda. And they all know that everybody has always has, and they've all been very very nice about it, amenable that for me to drive to Sebastian and sit there while they talk about a shed in somebody's backyard, and that's the only item on the agenda.
Okay, because that's
kind of I mean, literally, that's what it is. One time
she called you and told on me. The clerk.
I have to send her.
Because that's what I do. I usually look to see if there's something that pertains to the district, and then if there's not, which there isn't. So I did go last Tuesday, but it was, 2 hours of shrubbery in front of the new city council office. And that
or painting at the airport.
Right.
That's another one. That's
with all respect to them, it's just not. Okay. Right. So we can leave it.
Doesn't have anything to do with schools.
Right.
And why do we I know.
Well, I agree with you that there are many meetings where you feel like, it's a waste of time. And I do myself check the Vero Beach Planning and Zoning agenda, and there rarely is anything that needs our attention. But during the whole concurrency development, when we were working on the law and working on the interlocal agreement, we had a situation where there were changes to comp plans for instance, in Bellsmere, it was over 30,000 units that were going to be developed. And it didn't come through our loop through some mechanism. So we weren't aware of it until the plan was already being presented to the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council. We believe we've corrected the flow loop at this time so that Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council notifies the board whenever they get an application, so that we can get in on the mitigation process. Now, we no longer have concurrency going on in the manner it was before. The documents still exist, but if we don't renew our agreements, we won't be working under the same set of rules. So as long as the paper flow and the information flow continues to be good, I think we're okay. But if there is a breakdown in it and we don't learn about comp plan changes until later in the game, we have kind of forfeited some opportunity for some heavy-duty mitigation.
Okay. Sure. Okay.
I'll try to do the
submission. Do you want to?
Yeah.
I don't mind going back.
Because I've been doing it for like 3 years.
Karen said she doesn't.
I don't mind going back.
Okay. But then you still have Sebastian.
No, I was going to give him Vero Beach.
Then you get Vero Beach.
It's hard to suddenly know.
When the music stops, everybody sit down.
Right.
But
she keeps Sebastian.
Whatever the sign is on the back interior.
Is that 7? I'm in bed.
Sebastian's island, I can throw in Indian River Shores.
A month?
2 months. At 7 o'clock.
Oh, Lordy.
I need to look and see who's on the board before I commit.
Yeah. You may want to keep those for us. <Yeah. laughs> And just deal with the paddling.
Really?
Oh, dear.
I felt like I got sent to the superintendent's
office. Why are you putting the Ticonderoga in my face?
Because you haven't seen
number
it.
Number 2, up. Right, but it's my eyeball.
The question was, should we consider sending someone in our place? And I will tell you, I don't think so.
Okay.
Because if there is something that does arise, then they're going to want someone who is a responsible person, who is the authority, to say, well, I need to take this back to my board, or the board has expressed, or the majority, or the superintendent, or whatever it happens to be. And I don't think that is a position we want to advocate to anyone else. That's just, that was your original question.
Yeah, no, and I understand. I just wanted to throw
and
it out.
And I'm there. Happy to stay with the county commission 2 meetings a month at 7 p.m.
You know, I just, it's, I've now got a every Thursday night thing going on. Matt Sebastian, 2 Thursdays. I don't want, I mean, I need something else. I'll do something else.
So why don't you take Vero Beach? And I'll take those.
When's Vero Beach?
Thursdays at 1:30. Every two a month. But Vero Beach is built out, so they mostly aren't built out.
Yeah,
about
exactly.
About
Westfish. Yeah, okay. I'll do Vero Beach.
All
right.
Is
that Judy?
And if
who sat down where?
If you feel as though you really don't want to participate, then put it back on the municipality or the county and say, you know, if there's an issue, would you please red flag it for me, and I will make certain I am there if it pertains to schools in any way, shape, or form. And that puts it back on the municipality then to let you know if they really do need your, or let the chairman of the PNC know or whatever, because I did that during that 8 months with my mom. I just said, you know, let me know. Please let me know if there's a red flag or something that needs to be. I need to be, definitely be there.
And that makes me feel good. Thanks. I wasn't sure.
And everybody's comfortable with the rest of the agenda and everything like that. Back up to Ms. Johnson, you have another thing? I know Karen wants to get the committee report. So.
Well, let's do committee reports and forget what she wants done first, because it's almost
Two things. I attended Treasure Coast Council of Local Governments, I was the only school board member there, so they asked me to report. And one of the things that I talked to them about was our work in the legislature and in Congress. And I said that I felt that as elected officials, we are charged with the advocacy piece of making sure that the voice of our community, and in our case, the community is the school district, making sure the voice, our voice is heard, and not leaving it up to someone else, a paid gun, a hired gun, for instance, to deliver our message all the time. Because I've noticed a trend in government, and that's that as the budgets are shrinking, that these things, the lobbyists are, you know, it's being cut down. We've done it ourselves. We've cut down on our associations, and we've cut down on the number of lobbyists we have. And I express my concern that if we all do that collectively, we are just turning our voice over to someone else. We're turning that time in front of the congressmen and the legislators over to someone else. And I felt that that what we've seen happen recently in Congress with some not only the changes to the ESEA policy, but that they actually summarized in the bill that it was local school board members who had influenced these changes, and that we're hearing our own legislators say in public. For instance, Debbie Mayfield made a public statement that she was going to work so that school boards, school districts were not all penalized if they were doing well, that they were going to try to tailor the bills to impact the districts that were not doing well. And to me, that's the proof that what we're doing is very important. And while I represent you as legislative liaison, I know all of you speak to our legislators and all of you speak to our public and spread the word. And I just said to this group that I felt it was important that we all supported our boards in that form of advocacy, because the tendency is now to pull back, to pull funding away from doing that job. And we need to remember that it is part of our role to do that. It's part of the job. We can't do the job well if we're not looking at that piece and speaking up for our communities. So that was what happened at Treasure Coast Local Governments. And now I'm getting emails back from the people that were there. Tell me what to do. What do I do? Who do I talk to? But anyway, I wanted you to know that that message is out there because, you know, the people that don't believe that it is an effective tool are very outspoken about what a waste of money it is. Mm. So it's important that you all know that I took that message there. And the other thing was I went to the Treasure Coast Work Group down in Stewart. And we focused on educational trends, particularly in career technical. And I was so fortunate that Ruth Shaw came and represented our district. And there were actually five representatives from the five counties in that group. And they had prepared in advance a presentation for us so that all the bases were covered. All five counties had a different role in the presentation. And what I got from hearing all of those, what all the different counties are doing, I was hoping we could ask Ruth if she would come and summarize it to this group.
Oh, sure.
That'd be great.
Okay.
And it wouldn't take a full workshop, I don't think, but, you know, tag it onto another shorter workshop. Because the conversation, after we heard from all five counties, and actually we heard from the community college as well, it started a whole, they had a panel, and it started a whole line of questions about how do we collaborate? How can we perhaps have great more offerings for our students without having to fully fund a full-blown program? Is there a way to cooperate across county lines so that we can have more offerings for our students without having the budgetary impact? So I think that this conversation amongst the school boards is it's time. It's very timely to have that conversation.
I'd be glad to do that. And Ruth sent me an email. Vern sent a picture of them.
I asked him to take
and
pictures.
That was great. Yes. And she said it was an excellent conversation. So I know she'd be glad to share with you.
So if you're all interested in hearing, I know that you had brought up at one time having a vocational high school, but now you see that what that would take. But doesn't mean we can't look at our career tech in a different way. And we actually in Indian River County had really impressive statistics compared to the other counties. Mm-hmm. And they had more, they wanted to know, how do you do that? How are you doing all that? And so we are on the leading edge of it, but there's still a lot to learn from what the other counties are doing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
And Dr. Adams, I didn't realize, I flipped over to committee reports, and then you did have an item on the discussion of school board policies. Is there anything you wanted to add?
Well, actually, what I was going to do in the notebook that Judy provided you were some of the policies that Suzanne has worked on and bringing forward, so that we might bring our own policies up to date with some of the new legislation. And she's actually given me, I think, about 10 or so.
There are more.
So I didn't want to put them all in at one time. But I thought it would be worthwhile if we went and reviewed them so you had a chance to know what they are, and then if there's actually something that we can get on the agenda to set a public hearing for a change in a policy, we might be able to move on ahead because we've had some discussion. And I'm going to let Suzanne speak to the majority of them. I only on the McKay Scholarship for Students with Disabilities, which is the first one, you know, the McKay Scholarships have been available for a long time. And what happened this year is it was expanded to students with 504s, okay? And I do want you to know that we have 352 students in the school district with 504s. We also, the charter schools have 76, so we have a total of 418 504s within our school system. And there are some parameters, but those that has been expanded where they may have choice and have to be notified within a certain period of time. So I did follow up with Larry Hara, and they are putting procedures in place. They have been working on these new procedures that will be in place for contacting. Actually, they're using the resource specialists at the schools to get the letters home in the timely within what the law calls for. So I did want to give you an idea of how many we have and remind you that 504s now do have that option, and that we are putting procedures in place. We don't necessarily a school board. Suzanne, we didn't really think we needed a rule, but we need to make sure the procedures are in place.
Correct. You currently do not have any school board rules specifically with regard to McKay Scholarship students. Staff has addressed that information in your parent handbook, And so I just looked at the handbook, which is a superintendent procedure document, and suggested that they update that information so that that parent handbook addresses this new statutory requirement. And I know Larry, Mr. Harrow was going to be working on that.
Right.
So I don't, there's no legal requirement for you to have a school board rule, but because of the numbers of participants that you may mm-hmm. have, I thought it was important, number one, for you to be aware of this change so that if you start getting questions or comments about it, you
well,
at least are aware of the issue.
Including charter schools.
I have a comment. This isn't related to policy, but really to customer service. Are these 504 students having individual EPs done?
They do have accommodations. You know, some 504s are temporary. You know,
yeah.
you broke your leg, you need, or your arm, or you need some accommodations. So they do have accommodations that are related to whatever they have the 504. So it's kind of an education plan, but it doesn't fall under ESC now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ESC.
Right.
504 is separate from that.
Well, the reason I bring it up is I was surprised by a group EP for a gifted, you know, for my gifted students.
Okay.
My kids. And it surprised me that I was there with other parents and there was going to be a conversation about my child in front of other people.
Oh.
I didn't anticipate
uh-huh.
it coming. So I'm thinking about the customer service aspect of it and that when we have to have these meetings, do we have to have them in person or can we accommodate these parents like with a conference call? Is there a way that we can expand our customer service? Because now these students have choices. These students and parents have choices, and they can go somewhere else if they feel like we're not meeting their needs.
Right.
So I just thought that that might be one way to sort of change the way that we are managing these students and the,
mm-hmm.
and the meetings that accompany students with the special paperwork. And
right. I don't know what you wanted me to say. I don't want to encourage 400 kids
to. But 418 kids, if they had to have a full blown EP, is a lot of staff time. And
absolutely.
A lot of staff getting together. And to do it, I don't even know if it's allowed to be done in a conference call. That's what I'm
gotcha.
Suggesting to you that
okay.
instead of defaulting to these
group meetings,
that parents. I mean, I wasn't the only person who left that day. There were many other parents
okay.
who walked out.
Okay.
Instead of defaulting to the group EP, if
Got
there's
it.
Another way to take
okay.
care of these,
Got
these
it.
Matters, we might want to look at that
okay.
because these parents and students have choices and can go
yes,
somewhere
they do.
Else.
Okay. I appreciate that. Okay, then another one were gifts to board members, and so Suzanne, you want to go over that? I think there's some language we need to add to.
Yes, and this is twofold. In my letter, the purpose of the letter is twofold. Number one, during the 2011 legislative session, a new statute was passed specifically for school board members. Okay, with regard to gifts. In your training with FSBA and with the Commission on Ethics or wherever you get your ethics training, in the past, the laws have always been more comprehensive, local governments and local government employees. This particular statute is strictly for school board members. And what it says is that you're prohibited, a school board member is prohibited from accepting either directly or indirectly a gift in excess of $50. The Commission on Ethics rule is $100. From a lobbyist. But this rule is much broader. So number one, I want you to be aware of the statutory requirement or prohibition that you as a school board member are prohibited from accepting a gift in excess of $50. Now the question is from whom? It's any vendor. It's any potential vendor. It's anyone that could possibly do business with your school board. Which, when I read this, and I put it, the statute is very short, which, you know, yay for short, you know, statutes. The statute is very, very short. It gives absolutely no detail. When this law passed, we all sat down with some lobbyists and said, what does this mean? Who is a potential vendor? And they said, we have no idea. So we thought, well, let's see who's going to enforce it. So perhaps they can give us some guidance as to what they're going to be enforcing. We don't know who's going to enforce this law. It's under the Education Code. So it's not the Commission on Ethics. When we spoke with the gentleman at the Commission of Ethics, His response was, at this point, it's not within our jurisdiction, so we will not be looking to enforce this law. So we're not really sure who's going to be enforcing it. We don't really have good definitions of who a potential vendor could be. It could be anyone out there, could be a potential vendor of your school board.
Right.
The other thing that is really, really broad is it's not only a school board member, but it's also your relatives. And they reference a particular statutory section that defines relatives. And this definition of relative is the broadest definition I have ever seen. It's all of your immediate family. Your spouse, of course, is the standard one. All of your children, aunts, uncles, grandparents, all of that sort of thing. It's also step relatives. So if you have a step parent, if you have a step child, if you have a step uncle, a step aunt, a step grandparent. So it's a very broad, all-encompassing. And so,
in-laws included?
Yes, in-laws are included. It's also your in-laws. And so the in trying to figure it out, what we did is we said, okay, let's come up with a scenario and see if we can work our way through it. You know, I have a stepchild who graduated from college and is working in pick some state away from Florida, and a company takes them to dinner in New York City. You can't eat in New York City for less than $50 anymore. And that company also happens to be doing business here in Indian River, and they may be applying for some work here. So it sounds like we just violated the statute. There's no knowing or intentional. I mean, so this, number one, be aware of the statute. Nothing more than $50. Yes.
I've been dying to ask this question. So if that's the case, you know, sometimes when we go to conferences, there will be these dinners. And, you know, by the time you have wine, dessert, filet mignon, that's more than $50, I would think. How do you handle that? Because they take out groups of people. And could somebody call and say, the board members are eating dinner, you know, how do you handle that type of situation?
The law actually does address it. For that kind of a conference, let's assume that the host of the dinner is one person or one company, and that one person or one company is footing the bill for a cast of thousands for the dinner. That one person or that one company would be the vendor. And so the question under this law is that one person spending more than $50 for my dinner, for my gift? And if it's from soup to nuts, then you add all of that together. What are they spending for me? In my experience, typically what it is, it's maybe four or five companies that come together and have a dinner. And in that situation, what you have to look at is what each individual vendor is putting in for your dinner. So at the end, this always happens, at the end of the dinner or the lunch or whatever, the event, there's a tally done by the people hosting. It's always done. And then that tally tells them how much they spent per person. And then you divide it by however many vendors were putting in for it, and that vendor then puts in their amount per person. And typically how it's done is they set their menu and they set their dessert and they set their whatever so that the price comes in under the statutory requirements that cause a problem. However, that doesn't mean that you're not required to report it on the gift form that you file quarterly with the Commission on Ethics, if you receive a gift, a reportable gift. So my advice for people that attend, you know, because you do attend, you have to be social, you have to get out there and talk to people, is ask, either before you go, if they already have the tally, if it's a preset meal, ask before or ask after the next day. I need to know the tally. I need to know the gift value for the dinner. And they'll tell you. They will have a calculation, and it'll be, you know, $75.11 or, you know, whatever the amount is. And then at that point, you, as a board member, are required to say, is this a reportable gift that I have to put on my quarterly report form? Or is it not a reportable gift because they're not a vendor, they're not doing business with me, it's just somebody from New York that was bringing in information that has nothing to do with doing business in Florida. So you go through that analysis. There was an issue with one of these dinners a couple of years ago where, for a lot of reasons that nobody really understands, the person that did that calculation at the end, their math was wrong. And so it turned out that it was a reportable gift and that the people that attended needed to have reported it, but the information they received from the vendor was wrong. So they said, okay, not reportable, not over the dollar amounts, I'm fine, I don't have to worry about it. And then months later, somebody figured out, oh my gosh, the math was wrong. And so, no one got in any trouble about it because it was an honest mistake, and it wasn't the elected official's problem, it was that vendor who, got, don't do that again, get a calculator. But yes, so we have this new statute now that says nothing over $50. So number one, I want you to be aware of it. But number two, in looking at your school board rules, you don't have any specific rules for board members and gifts. You're not legally required to have such a rule. But if you would like to have something in place, you should think about it. Other school boards have gone 100 years and have never had put in place a school board rule regarding gifts. The law deals with it. The Commission on Ethics has advisory opinions. There's lots of information out there. It's not legally required. But number one, be aware of the new statute that became effective July 1. And number two, just think about it. If you would like to put something in place for board members, you've got stuff for staff. So this isn't about staff or employees. This is about board members, the five of you sitting here. So that was the reason for sharing that information, just to kind of put it in the back of your mind and think about it if you would care to.
Could I get a point of clarification on that? What you're saying is, despite the fact that the Commission on Ethics has a rule of $100, that this new rule we need to take very seriously because that's $50. It doesn't matter if anybody recognizes. It's the first test will be who has authority, the first challenge,
yes.
The first complaint. That's when we'll find out who has authority.
Yes.
So our litmus needs to be moved down to $50, not $100.
Correct.
And in answer to your question, too, I think Missy meant is, only my experience is, and you've been with me when I've done this, I just ask for a separate check. And you hear the comments about, well, we can't do that. This is a corporate. And I actually ask, and I don't know if it was with you or with Ms. Disney, but I have asked to see the manager because I will pay for my own dinner. And that's just a point of personal reference. I just don't want to fool with all the rest of this. I just guess it's part of it. But it's very easy to do, and they can't, and then when Ms. Disney and I were elected, we were told we were going to something that was being covered by a particular entity. When we got there, everyone was introduced to the people who were actually the sponsor. Because I asked, who's sponsoring this?
Suzanne, even if they claim
and
a
you have to be careful of that. Because it's the appearance of an architect or a builder or whatever it happens to be. But we actually were not given all information. And so now from that source, I'm suspect to anything they say as far as, and it's a shame, but as far as who is sponsoring, because we were then introduced to the sponsor for that evening. So, your best intentions.
Yeah. I went to one of these meals and just showed up for coffee and dessert. Am I still subject to that tally figure?
Just whatever you consumed.
Okay.
If you had coffee and dessert, then that would be the value of your gift. The example that we were talking about was the big dinner.
Okay.
You go for the big dinner, but all yeah. all if you're just going for coffee and that's it, then
yeah.
That's the value of your gift. And I am assuming that it's going to be under your $50.
Yeah. Or we can go and drink $50 worth of
hot chocolate.
But now, see, the Commission of Ethics is not over this statute. We wouldn't report it to them.
Right? No. There's no reporting requirement. I mean, that's the odd, surprising thing about this statute. There isn't a reporting requirement.
Yeah.
There's no audit requirement. I mean, I'm not even sure how this is going to work. Mm-hmm. You still have all of your obligations with the Commission on Ethics as far as reporting gifts and all your other financial disclosures. That all remains. But this is just another added layer where if you directly or indirectly, so you can't send your spouse to the dinner, in your place, directly or indirectly, any gift from any person, vendor, potential vendor, or other entity doing business with your school district. So it's much broader, whereas the Commission on Ethics says it needs to be a lobbyist. And they define a lobbyist to include a company or a person that you are doing business with or is attempting, like has a bid in or a response in or something, is attempting to do work with your government. This is very broad. A potential vendor is anybody out there could be a potential vendor. It's much broader.
Now, Ron Meyer had given an opinion to the Florida School Board Association that officers and directors, which Claudia is your still chairman, our meals are considered provided in the course of our duties.
Yes.
So they fall in a different, do they still have to be reported?
If let's say that you are an officer of the Florida School Board Association, mm-hmm. and you attend their meetings, typically, those meals are paid for by the organization, FSBA. That is a nonprofit organization that isn't a lobbyist or not trying to, they're not trying to get money from you or they're not trying to put forward something for this school district. Those are typically exempt and not reportable. They fall outside that definition of lobbyist to this board.
But they do have there is a product that they provide, the insurance.
Yeah.
That is separate. That is a separate legal entity. The Florida School Board Insurance Trust is a separate legal entity from the Florida School Board Association. Those are two separate entities.
But the executive director is...
Yes. They have some overlap of individuals who kind of created it and assist with the work, but they are two separate legal entities. So if you have a contract with FSBA, that does not mean that you also have a contract with FSBIT and vice versa. Yes.
Just
confusing. Yes, just don't eat.
Any other questions on this one?
Probably not good for you anyway.
Dr. Adams?
The next one really has to do with the Student Success Act, and we will be unable to complete this until we have completed negotiations. But this will give you an idea of some of the board rules that we will have to look at. So, Suzanne, is there anything you want to add to this? I know we're in negotiations on some language, so...
Your superintendent negotiation team is currently in negotiations with your instructional unit, but I just wanted to at least give you an idea of some of the language that will need to come out, the references to professional service contracts, all of that will come out, the references to the 97-day probationary period for instructional employees, that sort of thing comes out. And then I just happened to notice as I was reading through, there was actually some information in your instructional employee portion that really applies to administrators. And I went to your administrative portion of the rule, and the exact same language is still there, so I struck it out of the instructional. It probably just was a leftover, paragraph didn't get moved properly. So I took out a couple of paragraphs that are administrative information, and you already have it in that rule. So, but for the most part, this kind of information will be coming to you once negotiations have been completed.
So, do we need to create a rule for the administrators, separate and apart? I mean, are they not covered now?
No, they are. It was duplicative language.
Okay.
I think it just might have been a typo when it was published, because the language is in the administrative section, and for some reason was also duplicated in the instructional area. So it was a duplication of information only.
And I just wanted to comment, I like the idea for school board policy 3.40 to have an exit interview. Is that
okay?
There's a recommendation. It says the school board may want to consider amending its policies regarding employee resignations to include a requirement that the superintendent conduct an exit interview of the employee who has resigned in order to obtain the reasons for the resignation. In the event the reasons could lead to the improvements in the school system, I think that's a wonderful idea.
And the only reason why I suggested that is in your current 3.40 school board rule, there is a sentence that says a final evaluation is to be made when an employee leaves the school system, which I understand in concept. What you want to get at is, you know, why is there some sort of a separation? But I'm not sure that the superintendent, with this new instructional assessment program, if someone leaves in December, they will not have been far enough through that new system to actually issue a final evaluation. Mm-hmm. But you still want to inquire or reach out and get that information. And I think that's what you're doing. You have this in place. But rather than having this school board rule that says you've got to have a final evaluation, which I don't think is humanly possible, we take that sentence out, and you have a separate school board rule that talks about resignations, and we just insert a sentence in there that directs that some sort of an exit interview or whatever you call it, you know, whatever
that's
you call
what we
that,
to call it as an exit interview.
Is conducted, and then that information is periodically compiled and presented or something like that.
Sorry, just we were talking about FSBIT, and I just had a thought, and I thought I'd follow up on it now. What's the status of the RF? Were we doing an RFP or an RFQ for the consultant?
It's out.
It's out? Okay,
yeah, it's
thanks.
Out.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in.
It's okay, that's
what
we're
Good.
Okay, and so we will be coming back with language changes on this. And then the next one has to do with students attending private middle and high schools being able to participate in FSHAA-sponsored athletic programs within their home school zone. So you have to live in the Storm Grove zone to be able to participate in Storm Grove athletics. Okay.
But that's only if their schools are not members of the FHSAA.
That's right. Or they don't offer that sport. Or
obviously does. Masters obviously does.
Yes. Right.
St. Helens.
Yeah. And actually, we do that for our charter schools as well. Charter schools can participate in their home
school. And homeschool kids.
And homeschool. That's exactly right. So now we just hold in the private as well. So actually, Suzanne has added a rule,
a paragraph
under 6.14G. So if you want to take a look at that, we could bring that forward to set a public hearing to include that.
And the Florida High School Athletic Association has already promulgated their policies and procedures. So this is really on them. They're the ones that need to be doing the majority of this work. But as a school board, you'll be the ones that will be receiving the students. So there will be some obligations on your athletic directors to maintain appropriate documentation for eligibility for these students. So we just need to kind of get our little piece of it done.
Okay. When you have a student from another school, and there's a grade point average that is, there's a minimum standard, we have to get that from their school?
That will be part of that student's obligation to present that information to prove their eligibility. And that's actually set out in the FHSAA procedure.
From school to school, not through the student, I would think.
Right. But it will be incumbent upon the student
to request that it be extended.
So are you comfortable moving forward with that? Okay. And then the next one has to do with fire safety inspections, which now it includes charter schools. as well. And if you look at Board Rule 10.10 under inspections, Suzanne, do you want to speak to that language? She's added some language that would bring us in compliance with the new statutes regarding fire safety inspections.
This statute was also amended, and it had a couple of components. Some of it was already addressed in your rule, but I added the things that were not specifically addressed. The school board is required to designate your fire official. So if you contract with an outside person or if you have an on-staff fire official, however you deal with it here in Indian River, you have to designate who that person is. And the statute says the school board designated fire official. So it's like an administrative thing. It needs to be brought to you. This is our fire official. You wave your magic wand, and they're your fire official until you change your mind.
And that's Pete Copeman in our district.
Okay, perfect. So there'll have to be some sort of an agenda item that says he is the person that is the fire official under this rule. And then there are inspection requirements, which you've always had inspection requirements, and we just outlined them in the rule. There are specific standards that must be followed both under the statute and the State Board of Education rule. So we've just said you'll follow those standards. We didn't reiterate them. And then with regard to charter schools, it's a little different. This says that charter schools not located on your property or not otherwise operated by you are subject to these annual inspections. But it's the language of the statute seems to imply that the inspection will occur not by your fire official, but by the local government that otherwise has jurisdiction over that charter school. So it would be the city or the county, or if you happen to have a special fire district, it would be that entity. So it seems to me that they're bringing these inspections in line with some of the charter school statutory requirements, where if you have a charter school in a municipality, that the municipality is the one that comes in and does the building inspections and deals with all construction activities with regard to the charter school. They're now bringing the fire inspection authority into that similar concept of it's not always the school board that does it, but it's also that local government that also has jurisdiction over there.
Is that a change? Because I thought we had that. I thought that was part of the problem we had when Imagine set up at Church of God.
Well, they were able to do it because they didn't have it. I mean, we didn't forbid them from doing it, but we really felt that it was an issue because they remember they were having classes upstairs.
Right. Oh, yes.
And
yes. But aren't the charter schools currently, under their current statutory requirements, aren't they already doing this? Those inspections?
I think that the charter statute is not quite as crystal clear as we would like it to be. It says required inspections.
Okay. Right.
And so the question is, well, what's a required inspection?
Well, we have not been doing it ourselves.
No, we haven't been doing it.
So this just solidifies that.
Yes. And then we included a provision that they're required to provide you with a copy of their inspection report, so you've got that tracking.
Can we make certain that the communication goes when we set up our public hearing?
Yes.
We make it a point to let them know.
I will send this to Mr. Hare, who meets with them monthly, so that they can
be
brought up to date on
that. They need to know it's coming.
Sure.
Put it that way.
And so are you comfortable with bringing that forward to set a public hearing as well then?
Okay. Good job.
Thank you. And there'll be some others coming that we're getting them typed up, so you'll have some.
Since we're talking about policies, what's the status of the tobacco?
We just talked about that yesterday in negotiations. And we are talking about making sure that we get everything on the table that has to be negotiated. And that came up as an item that we said, you know, board would like that to get on the table so we could get a policy in place. We are going to set a policy. We just want to make sure that we do the negotiations. And so that is happening.
Okay. Thank you.
We're just about out of time, so unless anybody's got anything real quick. And then we'll go ahead and stand adjourned.
we'll get on the agenda for next time.
You know that Gambia has an elected superintendent.
Yeah.
Does that have any change
in the name? Well, you know, they might have, Scandia might have had management.